Hi family, my name's Zoe and I'm an alcoholic and it's really good to be here and my palms are sweating and my heart's beating really fast. And you know, that's quite a common feeling for me. And you know, reality was not my speciality at all, and sometimes still isn't. So I was born in a little market town in Northumberland, in the UK, called Alnwick. And my mother and father had been married before, and both had two children. And they met up in a pub in Somerset in Frome. And over a drink one night, my father-to-be said, "I'm moving to Northumberland, who will come with me?" And my mum was in an abusive marriage. She had two kids and she was not well herself. She went, "I will." So they got in this old car, drove to Northumberland and lived in a stone barn. It had like an open fire, like no electric or anything, in the middle of the North Alnwick Moors, you know. And that's where I was conceived, in this stone barn, you know. And my mum tells a story about, she always remembers being hungry. So now in her later years, she kind of, she hoards food, you know. I've just been visiting her and everything's full, you know, full to the brim. And, you know, it's quite interesting. And I've got like a little collage on the wall that I made of, you know, that time. And my mum's got this lovely like hippie dress and long flowing hair. And, you know, there's a picture up there of my mother and father getting married. And my dad has got a cabbage under his arm, you know, like, I mean, you know, and it was full of people smoking drugs. And, you know, so while I was born, I kind of crawled around, you know. I didn't have shoes, and I hung out with all these adults, you know. The house was full of, you know, dope smoking and guitar playing and fiddling and you know, and I remember just sort of looking around, just feeling, you know, very aware that I'm like the little person. And you know, after doing sort of work on myself, realizing that I even before I share, I feel like my throat is going to close up, you know, like I can't struggle to get the words out, you know. And and I was talking to my mother about this when I visited her last week, and she said, "Well, you didn't really talk to her about five, you know, and then I couldn't shut you up, you know." And it sort of makes sense, you know, that I didn't practice communicating. But what I did know, and what I'm super, super hot at, is feeling the energy of a room. You know, I can tell if someone's about to have a fight. You know, I can tell if people are being nice to each other without words. You know, and I think later in life, when I started to work with horses, I mean, it's a beautiful gift, you know, having all that kind of chaotic childhood. You know, it's a beautiful gift, the gift that I have with animals. And I can say that now without feeling a bit silly and a bit embarrassed, but it is, you know. And I believe a lot can be said without using the bloody mouth all the time. And you know, yeah, what a gift. So I've had quite a weird day actually today. I got home from quite a lovely trip away. The weather's been nice, and I went on some new walks and took loads of photos of foxgloves, and, you know, was really in the moment. And that's what recovery has given me, is being that I can be in the moment, like this moment right now. And you know, I just had loads of lovely walk. Anyway, last night, my neighbour, who I diagnosed him as being one of us, it's none of my business, you know, he locked himself out, and he's trying to get in the door. You know, like, I remember when I used to take a lot of amphetamine, and I would do something over and over and over again. Well, I'd be making dog collars all fucking night, or I'd be, you know, just obsessing about stuff. And then I'd go and do a day's work. anyway, he was trying to get in his house all bloody night. And that disturbed me, you know, that internal part of the self that gets disturbed by the actions of others. And quite rightly, it was justified. However, I now have the power within myself to respond, you know. So anyway, after the meeting this morning, I took the dogs out and I came back and there was a knock on the door, and it was this chap from next door. He went, "I'm so sorry." He says, "I don't remember what I was doing last night. I just woke up in the garden." Apparently he went across the road and banged on one of my neighbor's door, you know, and he's lost his credit card, his keys. Somehow he smashed his bike helmet up and he done, you know. And I'll tell you what, this, if this is all I share, it blew my mind away. And Miriam sent a message in the WhatsApp saying about, you know, in 7 years, a person changes like all their DNA, whatever. And literally in the last year, even, I know a year ago, I would have been, oh, fuck up. Or I wouldn't have answered the door. I wouldn't have been able to deal with it. I took a deep breath, opened the door. He's going, "I'm so sorry." And I says, "Look, I've been where you are. And if you need help or you want to come to a meeting," he says, "I really need help." I says, "Well, I'm here if you want to go to a meeting, you know, just whatever, you know," and left it at that. And there was no sort of like, oh, it was just such a beautiful moment, you know, because the fucker kept me awake. Now, going back to, you know, like how life, how it was and what happened, what it's like now. You know, I used to take drugs and be awake for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. Somehow I'd managed to hold down a job until I decided it wasn't what I wanted, and then I'd get another job. And I did a lot of living jobs. Looking after people's horses. I'd be awake all night and I'd go out early in the morning. So I would look like a really good employee. So, I'm on the ball and I get going. And then when it was time to ride the horses out, this is how it became. I used to have this lovely little bum bag. You know, Kate just did a crafty thing hour, and I'd made this bum bag, and it was like a tube, and you could fit two cans of cider in this bum bag, and it would just fit nicely down the saddle. So I'd go off riding in the woods and I'd be leading one horse and I'd be drinking in the other, you know. I'm a drink driver, I'm a drink horse rider, you know. And for me, how it got was, if my eyes opened, I needed to take a drink. But if it got to the point, if I drank too much, I would just pass out and then not know what day it was. You know, it was quite scary times. But yeah, I blamed it all on the fact that I'm an only child. You know, that's what I blamed it on. And then I blamed it on my mum leaving my dad. And then I blamed it on my grandfather dying. You know, all this stuff. And what I've learned in recovery is that all the stuff, you know, all the drama, all the story of Zoe's life, the only use that shit is to me now is to share it with someone else, you know, or that, I mean, that transformation in itself, because I was so secretive in my drinking, I would drink alone. You know, I didn't want anyone to find out. I had this mentality, no one will know. You know, I remember being a little kid and I'd go out on my bike and take things. You know, I used to just take things in the middle of the night, you know, as a little girl. And no one would know. You know, and I didn't realise until coming into recovery that having that mentality, no one will know, it meant that the self that I was born to be was so hidden because it was no one. And that is taking quite a lot of work to build up a bit of confidence to try new things. you know, to be kind with myself and you know, not beat myself up for not getting it right the next time. You know, and that works for sponsorship. I remember sponsoring this first a girl about, I don't know, six years ago, and we'd sit, and the only way I knew how to do it was sort of how I was shown at that time, was I sit there and bore the poor woman to death reading her the fucking big book. I didn't even know what I was reading, you know, and then she'd go home. I wouldn't see her for a few days, and you know, and she was drinking, and she said to me, "It doesn't matter, Zoe, because no one knows." I said, "Yeah, but you know." And it was in that moment when I went, "Oh fuck, you know, I've just said that thing that I needed to bloody hear myself." You know, what a gift. I mean, early recovery was like training a puppy for me. You know, you get a puppy home, so I don't know if there's any dog lovers in here, but you know, you get it home, and the first thing it does, it pisses on the floor, it howls all night, you know, it chews your shoes. And that's what I was like, you know, drunk and in early recovery. I'd be eating your shoes, I probably would be pissing on your carpet, and I wouldn't care, you know, I wouldn't care. You know, I had these so many masks, you know, I was like the character. I remember Mum dumped me off at this at the rehab, and at midday today I'm exactly 7 years sober, and I remember trying to get all these cans of scrumpy down my neck before I went in. And there were still two cans in the footwell. Of course, I was a passenger because she wouldn't let me drive. Don't know why. But there were two cans there. And I was thinking about them the whole time I was in there. Anyway, you know, for about 2 or 3 weeks, they don't let you ring out. It's not like you're kind of in prison, but they don't let you connect with the outside world, you know. I thought that was a bit bonkers, really. But to be honest, I would have rang my drug dealer because I knew he lived just up the road, you see. But so anyway, I got this first phone call, and I thought, well, I better ring Mother. And I said, the first thing I said was, "Have you still got them two cans of scrumpy?" And she went, "No, John's drank them," which is her partner now. I was fucking livid, absolutely livid. That's mine. You know what I mean? Like, I was actually like freaking out that he'd had my life. You know, it's my lifeblood, it's my heartbeat, it's everything. And I suppose in a way that was kind of a step one experience, because I knew then I was fucked. You know, I get so obsessed about two cans of cider that were mine. You know, it was almost like, all right, I'll do this rehab thing. As long as I know them two cans of cider are waiting for me, you know. I mean, crikey, I've drank so much and blacked out in Northumberland, and I've woke up in a lay-by opposite Stonehenge, not knowing how the fuck I got there, you know. The amount of times I've loaded a van up and moved, and, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with two breasts, a vagina, and a dirty bag of washing. That was it. You know, my dogs went to a friend's house, and that was hard, letting them go in the beginning. And I was just left with me, you know. I got to the point I would just give my body away. Whatever you want, I'll be whatever you want me to be, to anyone, anything, you know. And I had no power. And it's not about the drinking. I had no power about those behaviours. I had no power not to nick the chewing gum or whatever it was I was going to nick. I had no power to not run up credit card debt and just fucking not answer the phone. Just this behaviour was totally driving the show. And, you know, having that little chat with my neighbour this morning, it's really brought it all back, you know, that it's not so much drinking, drugging, or whatever, it's what or who I turn into when I do. And one thing's guaranteed is that if I have one, I will never stop. You know, I may never make it back. You know, I had a few relapses. I first got sober in 2010, And I had that mentality, and I'm only talking from my own experience, but I totally believe now that if I have a reservation, that I could have one will be all right. One, just one. And I had that, you know, I had that in the beginning. I'll just have a little tumbler of vodka. You know, it's tiny. It'd be fine. I'll just drink it real quick. You know, like this fucking nutsness in the head. And that's what happened. I was off to the races again. And then second time, I think I was sober about 8 months or something. And I was drinking energy drinks, you know, like by the fucking, like 12 of them a day. And I'm like rattling, you know, like, and oh my God. So I thought I was a total down and out, hopeless case. And I came to here and I thought I'll do a year, see what happens. And I wanted to prove you all wrong, you know, if I'm honest, because I'd like to be right. You know, look at me being good and right and honest. The truth was, I was full of shit. I was always wrong, and you couldn't rely on me for nothing. And so I thought, well, I'll do a year. And what I realized at the end of that year was that I had done every day through a year once. You know, like I've done one Christmas. I mean, none of these holidays are any interest to me whatsoever, but I've done a birthday. I've done, you know, I've gone to my first sober party. You know, that was weird. You know, I went to an NA party and there was like tables of sausage rolls and cake and little napkins and fucking 500 bottles of lemonade and Coke. And I was like, what the fuck have I just walked into, you know? But since then, I've managed to go out sober dancing. I've been to a few cacao ceremonies and, you know, and done some chanting. You know, I went off and trained to be a yoga teacher. I think in the old timers will call it a good bit of hardcore spiritual bypassing. So I did a lot of that, you know, a lot of like, I am at one with, you know, and like I said at the beginning of the share, reality is not my speciality. So what I was doing was just transferring myself onto this, I am a guru, you know, sort of doing my singing bowls, and I'm, you know, I'm all right, thanks very much, you know. But I'd actually drive down the road, I'd be cussing everyone, and I'd be, you know, like everyone's an asshole, and you know, bonkers. But you know, I did all that, and then I thought I was cured, you know, in 2019. I thought I was cured, although I was on the waiting list to have some therapy. And the waiting list was so long, I could have killed myself 50 times over. So, you know, and then I found out that my first partner, called Sooty, he died of a heart attack, you know, and he was in his 40s and he had a wife and a kid and, you know, all that. And we started our lives off, you know, he's my first partner, first love, or whatever you call it. And we started our lives off, you know, exactly the same. And I did have a bit of like survivor's guilt, I suppose, but it spun me out. So here I am doing all this yoga, and I'm doing a little bit of house sitting and dog walking and going through like spiritual fucking things and healing. And don't get me wrong, I love all that stuff, I even love it today. But what happened is I wasn't working my program, and I turned bonkers. And by March 2019, I had the bright idea, even though I swore in my early recovery that I'd never do a living job again, because from my own experience, I've done it so much, it's the same every time. These people who own you 7 days a week can bang on your door whenever they bloody hell want to. You know, and that over years, about 20 years I did that, it causes so much anxiety, and in recovery I couldn't do it, but I did it anyway. See, no power, I had no power in myself. I just thought, I got a good idea. I don't want to go to the funeral of Sooty, I can't handle that. I don't want to do the therapy, so I'm going to go and get a job. So I went, got a job 6 days a week. This woman was banging on my door telling me what the weather's going to be like, what time you're riding, and all this malarkey. And I was there right up until the lockdown, and until the June of the beginning of the lockdown. And by the end of it, this woman, you know, like we talk about codependency and stuff like that, this woman, I could hear her walking across the gravel in her little croc shoes. And I'd be in the stable yard going, oh my fucking God, you know. And I'm going, hi, madam, how are you? You know, like this, the masks, the false self. And I wasn't being myself at all. And it was painful. You know, it was painful that I made a decision based on self to go and do this thing when I knew how it was going to turn out. You know, it's just a little example of, you know, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. You know, it really is. And oh, the mad thing was, is I couldn't wait to get out of there. I was desperate to leave. I didn't know how to leave. The guy that I was, her husband, he had vascular dementia. So he was off the charts, bless him. And he came off one of the horses when we were out riding, and I managed to hoist him back on. And he decided it's probably not a best idea to ride anymore. So they got rid of the horses and gave me my notice. I couldn't believe it. You know, even though, you know, they've given me exactly what I've been hoping for, I couldn't believe they gave me, I was there every day. I wasn't drunk on the job. I showed up on time. The bastards, the absolute bastard. How dare they? And do you know what I had in the back of my mind? And this is me being totally honest. This guy is a multimillionaire. And I knew when I started there that he's quite old. So if I stay there long enough, he might give me a nice little bit in his will. You know, like this is the honesty of my, of the thinking process. All that stuff, you know, it's like, I couldn't believe it. You know, I couldn't believe it. And now I'm so fucking grateful that that happened. You know, I'm so grateful because the place was sending me nuts. Who'd have thought that a little old lady, I mean, she's fucking, you know, 80 odd years old, hunched over little lady, she's, you know, in her crocs. And it's like I had this something going on in me that was like scared to death of her. Anyway, we had a bit of a fallout, and you know, all this sort of like discord or discomfort came up, and she my dog Lily stepped in front of her, and she went, get out of the way, Lily, or I'll kill you. Now, she didn't mean it like properly, but bearing in mind I've had like nearly 18 months of this woman who's causing me discomfort, and I went, you ain't killing my dog, you fucking old cup. You know, I went for her like a Jack Russell on speed. I really did. And I was like, whoa, you know, what a nightmare. But do you know what, all through that, and I didn't think of picking a drink up because it's gone. You know, it's gone. But now what I'm finding out, especially like, you know, the 7-year itch coming up, as people have said, you know, I am seeing how I show up, and which is wonderful because I can correct it. You know, yes, I make mistakes. I make a lot of mistakes, you know. More recently, I went to college and I did a level 2, and I felt quite buzzy because, you know, I thought, oh, this is really good. You know, stroking the self ego and all that. So I thought, oh, I'll do the level 3. And it was just too much. It was too much for me. You know, like that job was too much for me. And this is what I'm learning. You know, that college course at the moment is too much for me. And what I'm learning is it's okay to say, so yes, too much for you, love. You know, rather than plowing on and banging my head against a brick wall. You know, I may go back to it. You know, what am I celebrating today in the meeting this morning? And I've been thinking about it ever since. You know, I'm celebrating the fact that my neighbour kept me awake, and it's just okay. I'm celebrating the fact that today I've had two phone calls from cold callers saying, have you had a car accident today? Fucking Londoners. So I blocked those numbers. You know, I haven't had those for years. And then all of a sudden, two in one day. And then this morning we had a power cut. So of course, I was thinking, how come we're having a power cut? You know, but it was really good because I was given a moment of quiet, and I just hoped that the electric would come back on because I need to be on the internet to be here. You know, the greatest gift of coming to AA is actually sharing my story, hearing other people's story, realizing that the shit show of my life can be of help to even one person on the planet. You know, that's enough for me. Knowing that I've got so far to go, but knowing how far I've come, you know. I hear people in the room saying I'm working a program, and when I was at the face-to-face meetings, I'd be quite obnoxious and say, well, what does that look like? What does it look like you're working a program? You know, and they look at me like I've got five heads, you know. And then if someone asked me that, working a program, it changes every day. But one thing I must do is never forget that I'm in a fellowship and that I must do something, whether that's the steps, whether that's sit quiet, whether that's, you know, eat healthily, making the fucking bed, whatever it is, you know, maybe it's reaching out to a newcomer or someone else, or just ringing a friend or a family member, whatever. Am I reaching out of my selfish self to be of service to others? And in kind of like a weird sort of way, it makes me a softer person. You know, I had so much body armor when I come into AA. Like from my thighs up to my waist, my bum and all, freezing cold, like it's almost like there was nothing there, you know, like all that root chakra sort of, you know, just like numb. I was numb, and now I'm not so numb, you know. I went swimming with my 70-year-old mother. We got our bathers on, and after we got over the giggles and felt like we didn't belong in this posh hotel, we sort of settled into it quite nicely. And to be in the water, you know, that was a definite win because there was no pain in my body. You know, I suffer with a lot of physical pain with different conditions that I live with, and no longer fight. I live with them, you know. I was in the water and there's like no pain, no emotional pain, no physical pain. And the sun was shining down. And those moments wouldn't be available to me if I was drinking, would not be available to me if I was, you know, if I was still in the madness, you know. So yeah, I don't know how much more I've got to say. I don't know what I'm doing all the time. But, you know, the last year I'm still in the same house I was in a year ago. Imagine that. I mean, and I've paid on my bill. I'm not in debt. I've paid my bills. The TV license has come through the door. I'm not paying that one yet. Not quite ready. But, you know, there's a little garden. I look after the plants and stuff like that. And, you know, and I take care of myself the best I can. You know, and as time goes on, it's incredible how hard I've been on myself and not even known. You know, like the level of denial of how much I dislike myself or dislove myself or whatever. Because I thought it was egoic. You know, if you think anything of yourself, you're a fucking narcissist. But it isn't that. You know, I'm worthy of healthy food. I'm worthy of regular water. I'm worthy of being out in nature. I'm worthy to be sitting here in a fucking Trusnera meeting and being part of the marathon. It's fucking wonderful. And I was at the last one as well. So all in all, you know, all in all, it's hard being me, but forgive me for saying I wouldn't want to be any of you, which is great, because when I was a kid, I wanted to be anybody but me, you know. So, yeah, the first one does the damage, and the second and the third and the ones after that are the ones that get you banging on people's doors in the middle of the night, really. And I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that person, you know. So, yeah, I think that's about it from me. But thanks for the meeting. And I will leave it there. Leave it at this.